the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Well, we all heard a lot about social media. Seems to be the method that most people communicate today. But does it raise its own issues, whether it's a millennial talking to a parent or a parent to a millennial? Joining me on the program is Dr. Pamela Rutledge. And Doctor, I'd like to talk to you about social media, its advent, and how much it has changed tremendously in terms of the way we communicate. And one of the things that I thought that we could start with is you talk about this time clock of consumer expectations, meaning in terms of perceptions, value, and respect. How has that changed with social media?
Well, I think social media has made everything much more immediate. So it's changed people's expectations about what's a reasonable amount of time to send a message and get a response. And that also depends upon the platform. So people who are used to texting their friends will have expectations about how quickly that friend should respond in a text. But for people running a business, they need to be aware that social media, the ability to post a complaint on Twitter or on a forum, all of these things have changed how they expect a company to respond back to them. I mean, even Amazon has Prime, right, where we can get our packages in 2 days. So there's been this compression of time. So if a company thinks they can wait a week to respond to a customer, they're mistaken, because that customer will feel like they're not important, like someone's not attended to them because of this new speed with which we all communicate.
Yeah, it's amazing to see, like, anytime there's a news event, the tweets that go out, and even with some kind of event happening, whether it's a tragic event or anything, somebody seems to be on the spot with their cell phone taking pictures, video, and immediately it's loaded up and it's distributed in social media. So everything happens instantaneously.
Everything happens very quickly. And we're in Southern California, so if we feel an earthquake, first you check Twitter before you check the news stations, because they can't respond that quickly. But you can track the progress of an earthquake up the coast of California just by watching the tweets.
You talk about social media has flattened hierarchies and increased access. This changes expectations internally, externally. Explain what you mean by that.
Well, social media has allowed people to reach out and contact people that would not have been otherwise available to them. You see it if you want to reach out to an author of a book that you like. It used to be that that was a very difficult process. You had to find the agent. You had to, you know, sort of go these circuitous routes to actually reach someone. But now you can contact people very easily using the internet. And that has decreased these hierarchies and expectations of how hard people are to reach, right? Which means that if you're running a business, the people who are at the quote-unquote bottom no longer feel like they should be completely segregated from people who are running the company. There's a new expectation that we're sort of in this more together, and that while people do have roles, that it isn't that the people at the bottom are not to be heard. People expect to be heard and to participate in this process.
Yeah, we recently saw that even at Google, where employees walked out on a company, and here's one of the most valuable, powerful companies in the world. So it has flattened some hierarchies. I want to talk about some of the social aspects of social media, and that is, it really struck me. I was at an Angels game this summer, and we were up at the Skybox watching a great game. It was a nice summer. And I'm looking down at the bleachers and the game is going on, but people are on their cell phones.
Right. Well, it's not uncommon for people to participate with any kind of activity using a device and being present and using multiple screens. They might be taking a picture to remember later. They might be sharing a moment with a friend. They might be able to connect with someone who's at another part of the stadium and feel that sort of shared experience. I think it's a mistake to assume that because people have their phones out that they're not attending to what's happening. That a lot of the use of social media in those situations allow them to enjoy it more, allow them to sort of savor moments, capture moments to review them later. And by focusing on an image that you're taking a picture of, you're actually sort of savoring that moment rather than just letting it all flow by. You're identifying that moment as special.
How has this changed social life? And the reason I'm asking is I have a son who's single, in his social life is his phone, dating apps, and things like that, where, let's say, boomers, that didn't exist. When we were growing up, you met somebody someplace, or you were referred to by a friend. Today, everything is in the digital space.
Right. But it's, I mean, fundamentally, people are still trying to do the same thing, right? I mean, and you were trying to figure out how to connect with other people. Whatever we did as boomers, the generation before us had a completely different way of doing it. But the fundamental goal of connecting with other people is still the same. So I think we shouldn't be too confused by the tools and focus instead on the behavior or the goal of the person using them. So yes, the phone is the portal to his social world. That's how he connects with friends. That's how he finds new people. He's still going to meet people in other kinds of ways, but that's now the new normal. And it doesn't mean that it's a diminishment of what we've been doing before. It's just a different way of doing it.
You talk about when you have a social media, let's say you're running a business, you need to have an emergency plan for when things go wrong. So let's go back to your example. Let's say you're a manufacturer, you have a product, or you're a retailer. Somebody responds and you don't respond back, or somehow it escapes you. 2 or 3 days go by, you have an angry customer. What's the emergency plan and why is that important in this instantaneous world that we live in today?
It's very important to, first of all, have a social media policy so that people understand the role of social media in the company at large, right? Because everyone connects on social media, and while it may not be part of your marketing team, your customer service people, your regular employees, they're all interfacing with the community in different kinds of ways. So it's very important to be clear on what's okay and what's not okay to talk about in terms of company information. An emergency plan is, what do we do if we have a complaint or something goes wrong? What's the process that gets attended to? Because otherwise you're going to end up like United Airlines with some guy singing on YouTube about how you broke their guitar, right? You don't want that kind of notoriety. What you want is to look responsive. Everybody makes mistakes. Everybody knows that everybody makes mistakes. What people don't like is to be ignored and to feel disrespected. So if you respond quickly, gosh, I didn't know that happened, or gosh, we're going to fix that. Let's make a plan for getting you satisfied, or whatever the issue is. If that's in place, then it can happen very quickly and it can stop that negative consumer feedback, right? And it can actually turn to even be more positive than just regular advertising.
I want to talk about, you mentioned how all consumer touch points are linked today. For example, customer service, marketing, PR, internal communications. When you talk about this, how does this all link together and create, for example, a brand?
Well, if you think about how people learn things, we learn things through multiple avenues, multiple pieces of information. So I might learn about you from your show. I might see a picture of you. I might hear others talk about you. So I form this larger opinion. We form the same opinions about brands in the same way. So the way our friends talk about your product, the way I experience your product, the way you talk about your product, the way customer service handles me, the way your employees talk about you, all of these things become part of the brand story or larger brand. So understanding that this is a 365-degree world, right? 360-degree world. 35 is days in the month. Anyway, 360-degree world where everything is part of a whole and that you can't control a single avenue of communications. So it's very important to be aware of the consistency and the values that come from the top and to make sure that those are driving all of your communications.
You talk about how social media has changed this perception of trust and the demand for authenticity. It's increased sensitivity, for example, negative reactions, and then people don't feel or want to feel like they're being pitched or sold something. And it's decreased trust in authority. I think the Pew Research and public opinion polls have the lowest trust, whether it's government officials, the media, the financial industry. Is that a result, all of this coming from social media today?
Well, it's in part because there is so much access to information. We've had the partisan nature of the political environment has also undermined a certain amount of trust in various information sources because there's been a lot of people who accuse other people of misinformation. People like to hear information that agrees with them. They're becoming less interested in hearing the other side. But that's a completely separate issue from the demand for authenticity, which is to say that because social media feels very immediate, it feels very personal, that people are expecting companies, brands to be human, to speak to them as human, to speak to them with that kind of authentic way. It's worked very well for celebrities who can reach out and connect with their fans directly rather than go through the traditional curated sources.
So when you're talking about this, let's translate this to what we see in leadership, whether it's at the corporate level, the government level. And you talk about leaders really need to be cognizant of social media. And I can think of two political, well, actually our last two presidents, Barack Obama and Donald Trump, both used social media effectively to become president.
Yes, they both did it because they understand that it's a way of speaking to the people, and that in and itself is a way of engaging a much larger crowd. And I think that CEOs in particular have to understand that they're no longer isolated, whether they want to, you know, they may want to be or may not want to be, but they have to be aware that they are now public figures and what they say matters. And so they have tremendous ability to reach out and make people feel connected and part of their organization by communicating. I think Barack Obama did that beautifully. He reached out, he connected with all kinds of people, he got them very excited about what he was doing. And Donald Trump is actually sort of a master of marketing.
Yeah, and it was amazing because even in the Trump presidency, the amount of money he spent versus his opponent, he leveraged social media to such extent, well, he's in the White House.
Right.
So how can businesses do that the same?
The first is that businesses need to think about what it is they're trying to say. You know, it's one thing with politics because they get to talk about a lot of different things. But when you're a business, you are really there for a purpose. And so you have to be very clear on what that purpose is. And then you have to figure out how do you tell that story in a different kind of way than you're used to telling it. In other words, you might be used to just saying, here's my special deal of the day. People don't want to hear that. They want to hear about the value of that product in terms of their own lives. So you're really telling a different kind of story on social media, and you're really looking for ways to create emotional engagement. And so I think that's the biggest difference between old marketing and new marketing, is that you're telling a story that's supposed to engage people emotionally.
So when you talk about engagement, separate that from, let's say, selling, because, you know, we're all bombarded, whether you're online with ads, I don't care if you're searching on Google, you're on Amazon, or you're watching television or listening to radio or a podcast.
Well, engagement is where you're offering someone something that they actually want. In other words, they're interested in what you have to say. Now, some of this is done by targeting, where you are able to identify the kinds of things that people click on that they're interested in, and then you put that kind of information in front of them. So if you know that I'm shopping for kitchen appliances, then maybe you're able to provide me with some information about your kitchen appliance. Not, hey, hey, buy my kitchen appliance, but here's what this can do that would help you. So it's really a way of showing the value of a product rather than, it's sort of whether you like your third grade teacher used to say, show, not tell. It's really looking at ways of showing value rather than trying to bombard people with a tell message, because those are increasingly disregarded. Matter of fact, there was some statistics coming out that, you know, 70 some percent of the population believes word of mouth from friends and acquaintances, and only about 14% believe the information they're getting directly from companies.
You talk about how boundaries are permeable. Let's talk about that for a minute. How does this apply?
Well, what that really means is that that people and information can just travel anywhere. You know, we are no longer, I think of it as, you know, we're no longer constrained by the time-space continuum, right? We can reach out, we can talk to people all around the world. You can find people, you can ask them questions. And those kind of boundaries means that traditional divisions really are no longer in place. So understanding how information can flow, that it can change the way people perceive things, is really important, that you can't control your message. Your message is out there. People take it, they share it, they change it. That who's a consumer, who's a producer, all of these things become sort of interchangeable.
You talk about, you know, when you talk about social media, we can talk about Twitter, we can talk about Instagram, we can talk about YouTube. There's all kinds of different platforms. Your advice is do not take on more media platforms than you can support. Let's talk about that, because there's various ways companies can use social media to reach an audience.
Right. Well, there's all kinds of social media platforms, indeed. And so the first thing you want to do is try and figure out, what is your plan? What are you trying to do? And we get very excited. I can't tell you how many people it's like, oh, I need a social media plan. I need a Facebook page. And they don't stop and think about what they're trying to do, who their customer is. Does their customer use Facebook? What kind of content goes on Facebook? So you start thinking about, what is it that you're trying to do? Where is your audience? And then figure out, where's the best place to connect with them? If you have limited resources, then you're not going to be able to support multiple platforms. It's a lot of work to keep fresh content on multiple platforms. You can't just have the same message everywhere, right? No one will see that. So you want to think, what are the most critical platforms that will engage my customer or get my job done or change the opinion of the people I'm trying to reach or whatever it is that you're trying to do? Where do I intersect, and how do I devote the resources to making that platform active and engageable so that people come to it? If I can do more than one platform, great. What's the next most important one for me to do? But not to just shotgun it all out. You might as well do none as do something poorly everywhere.
I want to talk about now bringing this down to the interpersonal level, let's say parent and child. You know, one of the things that really hit me, doctor, was a number of years ago, we've had cell phones now for quite some time. And I would call my children, and they wouldn't answer, so I'd have to put it into voicemail. Then we went to email, and then finally, a couple of years ago, they just said, Dad, if you want to get in touch with us, just text me. And it was sort of, you know, we've progressed in different ways of commuting, from talking on the phone to texting, because we live such busy lives. Let's talk about this between, let's say, parents and children, people that are retired, communicating with their children or grandchildren who may live in different states, or maybe today even in different countries.
You know, these tools are terrific for staying in touch with people, as long as you're willing to figure out how to best connect with the people that you want to connect with. So if your kid said, Dad, if you want to talk to me, text me, then that's a way for you to know how to reach them, right? And so my daughter just lives, well, depends on the traffic, either an hour or 2 hours away. And we text all the time. We do talk on the phone some, but these texts are like little touch points so that I stay in a very personal way in sort of what she's going through on a daily basis. Because you can text someone a lot without being annoying, but we don't have the time to, you know, talk for 2 hours a day on the telephone. So you pick the tool that's going to achieve your goal. Now, obviously, there's going to be some conversations that you aren't even going to want to use technology for. You were talking earlier about, you know, passing wealth among generations. You know, that's not something you text out. That's a serious conversation that you have in person, if possible, or on the phone, or using Skype or some other video conferencing thing where you can see someone, where, because you're talking about something serious, everybody gets that. If you're touching base with someone just sort of to say, hi, I'm thinking about you, let's stay connected, that you do in the way that best works for both parties. Now, I'm not going to text my 91-year-old father because he can't see his phone very much. On the other hand, he does email just fine, and he emails jokes all the time. So there's lots of different ways, and you just choose the tool based upon the person that you want to connect with. But I think it would be a mistake. I think a lot of people say, well, I don't feel very important if I'm only being texted by my kids, or I must not be very important in their lives. I think, don't make those judgments about your stereotypes about a tool. Don't project that onto their behavior.
Yeah, because it's very easy, as you mentioned earlier, the thing that has changed with social media is instantaneous. So when something happens, you talked about this shortened timeline, whether you're a company responding to a complaint or a problem, people's expectations have hastened, and they're shorter today. And that probably includes communication between parents and children.
Yeah, I think so. And it creates the sense of access, right? In other words, you don't have to wait for the Sunday call long distance and worry about rates and all of those things that people used to worry about. What you worry about is just staying connected. What's the best way to drop somebody a note, right? And it, you know, what used to be paper is now a text.
And so in this world that we live in now, with social media, where everything is instantaneous, timelines have been shortened, what is your best advice, whether you're a parent, a kid going to college, a youngster, what would be the advice today with social media? How to use it and the best way to use it?
The advice that I continually give people is to be clear on your goals. In other words, there's all these great tools. It's not uncommon for people to experiment with all these tools, but at a certain point you step back and you say, what is it that I'm using well and what's really helping me do what I'm doing? And I talk to an awful lot of parents who are worried about their children overusing social media. Well, I'm sure that my dad was worried about me overusing the telephone or overusing the car. But when you're teenagers, you're trying to connect with other people. If you find yourself entirely focused on your phone and to the detriment of other things, then you have to reevaluate, because it's really about balance. You know, the relationships that you have, are you cultivating the ones that you want? How are you going to best do that? Does it social media the right way? Is stopping by somebody's house the right way? You make judgments based upon what you can do and the best way to do it. But it's really all about balance.
Yeah, you almost think that, because one of the problems, I guess, that has emerged from social media is the amount of time that a lot of younger people spend on social media, on their phones, texting, posting to Facebook, Instagram, all those kind of things in hours of a day. They used to say the same thing about our generation and the amount of time we spent watching television.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, what was your media drug of choice, right? In other words, we all had something that made our parents nuts.
So if people would like to find out more, because you write prolifically on the subject, how could they find out more about what you do?
Well, my website is PamelaRutledge.com. They could look for me there.
All right. Well, Doctor, thanks so much for joining us on the program. We really appreciate it. You have a nice holiday.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Bye-bye. I wanted to bring Dr. Rutledge on the program because so much of our world is changing today. We've been covering a number of topics here. Recently did one on, you know, why wealth never makes it down to the third generation. And this one is about communication. We live in a different world today, as the doctor was talking about. Everything is instantaneous. Just think of any news event that happens. It used to be two or three decades ago, a news event, you'd have to go home and watch the evening news at 5:30. What are you going to watch at 5:30 and learn that you don't already know throughout the day? You probably get alerts to your cell phone, but it's also changing the way we communicate. And that is really important, because behind it all is, the doctor said, some of the most important communications are one-on-one and face-to-face. I'm Jim Poplavin. Thanks for listening.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.